This is the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by MorphVision. This show is dedicated to arming companies with the skills, know-how, and technology they will need to future-proof their IP protection strategy for the years ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. I'm Brandi Spence, head of marketing with MorphVision. I'm thrilled to welcome Todd Reeves, the director of the Building Respect for IP division at the World Intellectual Property Organization, also known as WIPO. Todd's work in crafting policy, empowering enforcement, and steering global discussions on IP rights really shapes how we respect and protect intellectual property across borders. I'm really looking forward in getting his perspective on IP challenges and innovations today. Hey, Todd, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brandi. Glad to be here.
To start off with, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of a brief background on you and how you landed at your current role at WIPO?
Hey, thanks, Brandi. So yes, I joined the World Intellectual Property Organization, or WIPO, in May of 2022, after spending about 16 years at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office working almost exclusively in IP enforcement and IP and kind of the intersection with trade issues. I did two attaché, USPTO attaché stints, one here in Geneva, Switzerland, about a decade ago, and then another one in Mexico, covering Mexico, Central America, the Caribbean. And in these attaché roles, I was kind of, you know, the person in the region or in the country representing the U.S. government, specifically the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, on kind of all things IP. So that was 16 years at the USPTO. Before that, about 10 years at U.S. Customs and later Customs and Border Protection, working commercial fraud and then later IP enforcement, which is part of commercial fraud. But I started my career, on a surprising day or not, as a customs inspector right out of college. So I remember back during the early days of IP enforcement when, you know, it was really software titles, movie titles, musics burned to CDs. This is even before DVDs. And I remember fresh out of the academy, I was just a young customs inspector, and this flight came in from the Far East, and gentleman had a suitcase full of these CDs. And at the time, and I think customs still has this regulation, you could import one type of IP infringing article, right? So you could have basically a pirated CD, and it was really my title. So even though there were many different titles, many different pirated CDs in this suitcase, my supervisor at the time said, oh, let it go. He's got one of each type. And I'm thinking, you know, this is going to wind up on the streets, you know, before the end of the day. It really kind of taught me early on, like, we should really be enforcing, because behind every one of these pieces of software or pieces of music or even movies, you know, there's individuals put that together, their jobs rely on. So that's kind of my background in a nutshell, but really ready to receive more questions and move into this.
I mean, that's really fascinating to have started from that side of things. One of the things that I've learned over the years and just talking to IP professionals, I've always found that they are very passionate people. And I can see that, you know, that kind of was a spark for you in your career, you know, in IP enforcement. What would you say also like motivates and drives you every day? What additional sparks do you have?
I would say more the consumer protection angle of IP enforcement. I mean, of course, we encourage member states and the rights holders to a large extent to enforce all kinds of rights across the board. But it's those ones that are affiliated or attached to products that we put on our body, that we consume, that we let our children play with as far as toys, that have the potential of harming, physically harming people. That's what really drives me. Yes, you know, the luxury handbags, the watches, you know, everything else that kind of goes along with that. Of course, those are rights that must be protected. But I think what really motivates me and what pushes me along, and I think what really resonates with law enforcement officials that we come in contact or government officials, is more the health and safety perspective of IP enforcement. We could, you know, I talked a little bit about kind of the consumer goods, but also car parts and aircraft parts. And, you know, I just read a recent study from one of our partner international organizations about counterfeit products or parts that wind up in nuclear reactors, nuclear energy stations, right? So it's quite scary when you look at it, you know, kind of big picture. But again, what really motivates me is kind of the health and safety aspect.
Yeah, and that's the part, obviously, that's terrifying, right? Like you mentioned, you know, the fake watch, the handbag. Sure, those have those implications. But when you're talking about the consumers, it's just, it's terrifying what you don't know. And to not even have purchased it, right? To have a car and then not have your airbags function when you need to, right? That's absolutely terrifying.
I was actually flying to an international conference about a month ago. And I thought, okay, I'll jump on Wi-Fi and be able to catch up on some, you know, some work. And I did. And I surprisingly, I received a LinkedIn post from one of my colleagues with a story about counterfeit aircraft parts winding up in the kind of supply chain of United, American, I think JetBlue, Southwest. And it's not a story that you want to be reading when you're 35,000.
Right.
So yeah, it really, you know, it really kind of hits home when we're all consumers. Whatever we do, we're all consumers. We need to really be aware of what we're buying. And yes.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, yeah, these things get into the supply chain and whether you're buying them or not, someone does. And yeah, as you mentioned, it is terrifying. Well, that leads us over to sort of to the broader IP landscape, right? In your role overseeing IP policy discussions, how would you summarize the current state of IP protection and enforcement worldwide?
I would say there's always room for improvement, but in the, say, the last 10 years that I, at least that I've been, you know, kind of following or attached to WIPO in some way or another, I've noticed that member states are really thinking more about the IP enforcement side. You know, of course, you have to have protection, but without enforcement, protection is really meaningless, right? So I'm getting in a lot of the bilaterals that I hold during the WIPO General Assembly. Member states come to me, come to, you know, some of my colleagues, and they requesting, you know, technical assistance, whether it's legislative assistance or training, capacity building, to really get their national systems up to speed and to be able to effectively and efficiently enforce the IP rights. So I've seen, you know, I've seen governance kind of move in the right direction of really, you know, identifying the problem and trying to fix the problem. And whether that is, you know, weak IP laws, you have to include IP enforcement laws, or the implementation of those laws. They're really making, most of them are really making the effort to try to improve. So I am seeing improvement, but, you know, it's hard to keep up with the bad guys. You know, they don't have the restrictions that we, you know, public organizations have. So yes, it is a challenge.
Yeah, they definitely don't follow the rules, and they're very crafty, and they certainly leverage technology quite a bit. So understanding, obviously, the current state sets the stage for future challenges. What are some of the biggest hurdles of IP enforcement, in your opinion, over the next decade, especially with the rapid evolution of technology as we're seeing right now?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's technology, right? Back when I first started doing this, again, the technology was reduced to a CD, you know, carrying something, right? You know, basically holding whatever content it was. And we had the internet, but it was really early days. There wasn't file sharing. There wasn't streaming. There wasn't anything like that. So, you know, one of the biggest challenges is obviously technology, but it's also one of our biggest, most important tools if we can really identify how to use it in the right way, in an efficient way, whether that's through targeting or, you know, using AI to help us identify counterfeit products or pirated content online. You know, the less humans actually have to spend time looking at this, the better. The technology's there. We just need to kind of put it into place. I know there's a lot of companies that are really, you know, doing some good work there.
For sure. One thing I'd love to dive into a little bit further are some of the initiatives that your division is focusing, including the tools and systems that are being developed, such as the WIPO Alert, the custom accreditation system for the member states. Can you touch a little bit on that as well and tell us a little bit about some of those initiatives?
Yeah, no, I'd love to. And then WIPO Alert, you know, a good starting point with that. It was launched in 2019, and it was basically a way to facilitate kind of the public-private partnerships that exist, you know, in so many different areas. So what we did at WIPO was create a system, and we're basically maintaining a database kind of in the middle of the authorized contributors, and those are national governments, national agencies, typically law enforcement agencies. And then on the other side of the database, we have the authorized users, and those are the ad tech companies, the advertising industries. And so what happens with this database is you've got the contributors contributing, if you will, lists of infringing, copyright infringing websites, so domain names that have been found, that have been determined to be infringing, typically through like a website blocking order. Once that national authority or authorized contributor uploads that list in the database, then on the other end, the advertisers have access to that. And the great thing about it is they can use those domain names to block any advertising that would otherwise go to these illegal copyright infringing websites. So I don't know how familiar you are with the advertising industry. I'm not that familiar with it.
I used to be in it many years ago.
I should say that I wasn't really that familiar with it before I started on this project, but it's very high tech and very fast paced. And a lot of times brand owners don't necessarily know where their ads are going. So a lot of it is just done by algorithm, right? By the number of hits. So if the advertising companies can take these lists or this list, and basically block those domain names from their automated systems, then what you're doing is you're protecting reputation of the legitimate brands, and you're cutting off the revenue that would otherwise go to these illicit websites. So that's Swipeable Alert in a nutshell. Currently, we have exactly 14 member states or authorized contributors. And then on the other side, on the advertising side, the authorized users, we have roughly 30, and that's increasing, day by day. And approximately 7,000 live domain names that are reflective of this, illegal activity, illicit activity, copyright infringing websites. So we're trying to grow that. We need to grow it with the contributors and also grow it with the users. We're hearing some good results so far. And it's relatively new. We launched it in 2019. We really need to kind of build it out, promote it more. We're looking at different ways to do that. So IPAS, for your listeners who may not be familiar with that acronym, is the Industrial Property Administration System. So that is basically kind of an off-the-shelf system that Swipeable provides to its member states to allow them to get up and running with being able to process trademark, patent, industrial design applications electronically, and then also maintain those records. So, rather than having to use or kind of use an old antiquated, paper system, they can use the IPAS system. They don't have to develop it themselves. So there are currently roughly 90 member states. And just to give you kind of overall picture, we have 193 member states or the World Intellectual Property Organization. So roughly half of them are IPAS users. So what we're doing on the Customs Recordation Information System is building out a recordation system, a national level recordation system that will be linked to the IPAS, their national IP office system, right? So the recordation system will be more for the customs officers to be able to make those quick determinations at the border. And then you have the IPAS registration system that's maintained by the IP office. And a lot of times, my experience, having worked in the U.S. government for a number of years, the different agencies and departments don't always talk or work together that well. And, it's something that's, across the globe. It's not just the U.S., it's not just developed countries or developing countries, it's across the board. So what we're trying to do is create this system that will allow right holders to basically file a customs recordation electronically. And the customs system, Chris, will talk with the IPAS system at the IP office, make sure that the right is recordable, it's enforceable, and then it returns that back to the customs system, and those customs officers will be able to make those determinations. We're going to build in a lot of data fields, not just what's in the IP office system, but kind of more custom-specific data fields. So take, for example, routes of transportation, authorized manufacturers, authorized exporters, importers, images of the trademark and the trademark used in commerce. We'll even kind of build in, fields where right holders can upload PowerPoint presentations or PDFs as kind of a user manual for the customs officers to make those identifications. So that's what we're working on right now. It's in the kind of the design and development phase. We won't really take off until the beginning of 2024. We're coming into a new biennium for the organization. but we're almost there.
I mean, that sounds like something that many different stakeholders will benefit from, right? So, and I know that Customs is always looking to learn more and to get more information from the rights holders so that they can actually help enforce at the border. So it seems like something like this would be just so user-friendly, right?
We're looking forward to it. Yes.
Yeah. Actually, I had a previous podcast guest recently, Gabriela Bowden from ePoint, who, if my listeners get a chance to listen to that episode as well, she brought on the topic of the Caribbean and some of these countries who don't have this electronic system and how it took her almost 8 to 9 months to get files because they're using this, you know, paper dated system. So really exciting to hear about these initiatives and hopefully seeing more countries adopt them as well and coming into the fold, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So going back into some of those challenges that we had talked about from a technology standpoint, let's now turn to what you think perhaps IP laws need to do in order to adopt and remain relevant and effective to some of these technologies that we're seeing, you know, swiftly moving into the space.
Well, that's a great question. I mean, as I think I mentioned earlier, I mean, a lot of times the law is still to keep up with the technology, right? So that's always been kind of part of, you know, public sector's issue in trying to enforce IP law or IP rights. As far as like moving forward, I mean, ideally, if the laws were kind of like technology neutral and it could apply to any type of technology in the future, but we don't know what's in the future, right? That's always the concern or the issue. One area that we're looking at right now is IP enforcement in the metaverse, right? So that's a really interesting area. And it's not that the metaverse is nothing new. It's just, it's like NFTs or blockchain, you know, it gets a lot of press and a lot of attention. And then it kind of like quiets down a little bit and then something else comes, right? So we're still focusing on the metaverse and there's so much potential, but it's been in existence for a long time. You look at a lot of the, you know, the gaming platforms, you know, they're centralized metaverses, if you will. So what we've done is we've commissioned a study, my division commissioned a study on the localization of IP infringement, which includes the metaverse. So where does the infringement occur and in which jurisdiction can you bring an action? And it's a really fascinating study. So I encourage all of your listeners or viewers to look at that. And that's on our website, the Building Respect for IP Division website or webpage on WIPO.int. So
we'll make sure to link to that on the podcast as well. But yeah, that sounds very interesting. Would love to definitely look into that as well. Businesses have to be ready, obviously, to face these technological challenges across all these different jurisdictions, and that requires, obviously, a robust strategy. How important do you find it is for businesses to have the right IP strategy, a solid IP strategy? And what are some of the key components, in your opinion, that constitute a successful one?
Well, my division, I mean, as you know, it focuses more on the enforcement side, but I think, you know, kind of from a big picture perspective, I mean, businesses really have to do an inventory of the IP they have. A lot of times, they might not know that they've got trade secrets that that are protected, but they may not really consider them trade secrets, right? And know how that has to be maintained or what can be done if those are misappropriated. Same goes for trademarks, copyrights, patents. You know, really start with the inventory to kind of work out from there. On the enforcement side, I would just say, you know, you've got to look at every market that you're doing business in, right? Or you intend to do business in. You've got to get out, you've got to register those rights in those jurisdictions. And of course, WIPO has, you know, the Patent Cooperation Treaty for patents, the Madrid system for trademarks, Hague system for designs, Lisbon for geographical indications. We have the systems that will help right holders kind of not have like an international registration per se, but to be able to reach out to many different members in member states, countries, as possible. It's a lot more effective than just going have it alone. So get those rights registered. And then once they're registered, you know, you've got to make your contacts in those countries, whether they're local lawyers, right holder associations, whatever the case may be, you know, engage, you know, monitoring systems. You're only seeing kind of what's happening in your jurisdiction. You may not know what's going, you probably don't know what's going on somewhere else. So you've got to use, you know, local professionals to really keep an eye on the market, see what's there. And of course, you know, coming from, you know, a customs background, you've got to record those rights because customs enforcement is really, you know, it's the front line of defense. You know, if customs can stop it at the border, you've done a lot of good for yourself right there. You're not having to worry about going into markets and, you know, bothering the police and the prosecutors and everybody else to try to, you know, issue, you know, warrants or whatever the case may be. Customs is really effective. And just kind of going back to the recordation system that we're designing, that is a tool that will allow the customs officers to make those quick determinations. So that's kind of where I would go, you know, start with an inventory and then, you know, really get the lay of the land of where you're going to be doing business, and not only where you're doing business, but also kind of key, I would say, like the countries that are more apt or prone to be producing the counterfeit goods, right? So you definitely want to register there and record as well.
Yeah, for sure. Especially some of those countries where it's really first to file, not first to use. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues and a lot of hurdles you have to clear and traps that you have to kind of be aware of. But I would always, you know, when I was an attaché in Mexico, I mean, getting local counsel and really, you know, somebody who really understands how things work and what's available, that's so important.
For sure. Well, looking ahead, it's always insightful to predict where we might be heading. 5 years from now, what do you think the future of IP enforcement is going to look like? And how do you see your role and perhaps WIPO's initiatives evolving in response to some of these changes?
Well, I mean, the sad thing is in 5 years, I'll still be gainfully employed in the IP enforcement world. We're not going to be able to eradicate it right away. You know, regardless of the tools that we develop, it will still be there. As long as there are consumers that are willing to kind of turn a blind eye and buy this stuff, it will be there. In 5 years, I see a lot more like technological advances on both sides. I'm making our job harder in some respects, and then making our job a little bit easier. And I'm really interested in the kind of the AI side of things, especially when you look at like, you know, looking at like risk indicators and customs importations or, you know, e-commerce platforms being able to look at a lot of different categories and types of merchandise and see what might be counterfeit and be able to take that down. I think that would be, you know, a direction that I'd really like to see us go. But 5 years from now, I mean, I you know, I told you the story 30 years ago when I was a customs inspector and everything was in a suitcase. You know, who knows what it will be 5 years. It's technology is advancing so quickly. Yes, AI has been around a long time, but it's just now that it's coming into kind of more of the forefront and we're really seeing what it can do, what it's capable of. In some respects, it's scary, kind of outside of the IP enforcement world. It's a little bit scary, but I think there'll be some good things coming out of it as well.
Yeah, it has certainly evolved at this insane pace. And you're right, it is here to stay. And I think in ways that we can probably imagine and in ways that we are probably going to be shocked in about 5 years. It'll be certainly very interesting. But those are some very interesting points that you put there in terms of customs and how it could help. And hope to see that come to light very quickly for the good, certainly. Todd, your insights have been really incredibly enlightening. I really appreciate it. I think the work that you're doing is really key in shaping a world where IP is respected and innovation continues to thrive. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your thoughts with us. Really appreciate it. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about WIPO and the initiatives that you guys are doing in your division, where can they go?
They can go to WIPO.int and then look under Understand and Learn and then scroll down to Enforcement. Click on that. That'll take them to our page. They can reach out to us directly at enforcement@WIPO.int. And also look for me on LinkedIn. I've been told that I'm a very prolific poster. I'm getting into that a little bit more, but definitely always interested in talking to people about IP enforcement and all the good that it can do.
Wonderful. We'll link to all of those as well. Well, thanks again. Really appreciate your time. And thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. We hope to have you back on future episodes of The Future of IP Protection.
Thanks for having me, Brandy.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Future of IP Protection podcast brought to you by Mark Vision. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you'd like to learn more about how Mark Vision can help you transform your IP protection strategy, visit us at markvision.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the next episode.